Dorothea there with Theodore. Dorothea, top of the right circle, reels it in, hands it off. Carlson shoots off the post and home! William Carlson, long post and in for a power play goal!
Live from the Findlay Chevrolet Fox Sports Las Vegas studio and live at lvsportsnetwork.com.
Shoots, good save, Fleury. Rebound loose, a shot, and no! It goes through Fleury for a goal!
This is the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show, your home for access with the team, exclusive player interviews, and breaking news from around the National Hockey League. Here are your hosts, Darren Millard and Ryan Wallace.
Welcome in, Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show, Fox Sports Las Vegas. Ryan Wallace, Chris Chapman, live inside the Findlay Chevrolet Fox Sports Las Vegas studios. Findlay Chevrolet on the 215, home of the... Well, it finally happened. Connor McDavid had his superstar moment in the Stanley Cup Final, and the Edmonton Oilers have won a game to force another. That's right, Game 5 of the Stanley Cup Final will go tomorrow. The Panthers lead the series 3-1, and they were trounced in Game 4, an 8-1 final in favor of the Edmonton Oilers. It was a monster performance from Connor McDavid. It was a monster performance from the depth players of the Edmonton Oilers, which continues to be a theme in this series. And we will shortly get to our great observations coming out of game number 4. We'll also kind of bat around the idea or the thought process that somehow after one game, the Edmonton Oilers... have they turned the tables on the Florida Panthers? Like, is all the pressure on Florida now? Do you believe that this is the start of something for Edmonton? Or was that a moment for their fans to enjoy a home game in the Stanley Cup Final and feel good about where they're at? Is it nothing more than that? We'll discuss that a little bit later on as well. We've also got Tyler Ferraro from the Vegas Golden Knights. He's going to stop by. I don't know if you noticed, Chapman, but the Golden Knights won an Emmy. And they won an Emmy yesterday for Raise the Banner, which was kind of a, I don't want to say it's a specialty program, but when you are raising a banner for the first time in franchise history, it becomes a specialty type of program where the Golden Knights were recognized, they were honored, and they won an Emmy for that production of the Golden Knights Raising the Banner October 10th of this season. And it's just cool, like you're recognizing a championship and then you go out and win an award on top of it. It just goes to show the excellence that we have when it comes to the Golden Knights organization on the ice, in the front office, and also in terms of production, because this production staff goes above and beyond. So we're going to pick Tyler's brain a little bit on the creative that went into that performance and went into that Emmy Award. But we're also going to talk to Tyler about the summer, what things... are in the works possibly for next season and beyond for the Vegas Golden Knights and their production staff. And then we'll hit one-timers, news and notes from around the National Hockey League in hour number 2 as well before rounding out today with catching up with Chapman. But before we get into great observations, Chapman, game 4, a rout by the Edmonton Oilers, a 4-point night for Connor McDavid. And not only is it a 4-point night for Connor McDavid, he breaks Wayne Gretzky's postseason record for most assists in a playoff year with 32. What were your impressions from Game 4?
Well, my first impression, Ryan, is the Florida Panthers stunk. Like, flat out stunk. Sergei Bobrovsky, I mean, let's be honest. He was the second best goalie of the night for the Florida Panthers, and Anthony Stolarz, he wasn't very good either. So I think it's one of those things where if you're the Florida Panthers, you look at that game and you're just like, what the hell happened? But credit to the Oilers. You know, they took advantage. I thought Darnell Nurse should have been thrown out. I thought it was a dirty hit, but nonetheless, it didn't transpire that way. And Edmonton, they are aggressive on the kill, and they capitalized early on that Darnell Nurse minor, and they got up ahead. And you know, like it was pretty I thought it was pretty telling early because Brandon Montour on that play, the Yanmark goal, he takes out Bobrovsky. So Bobrovsky had no chance to make a play on the puck, and it's just sitting there right in front of the open net for Yanmark to put it in. And it was kind of ominous, I think, for the rest of the night, the way things were going to happen. The second goal, you get a bad defensive play against the wall. It seemed to me like Florida just was not engaged at all. Like, it struck me as we got our win in game three. We're up 3-0. We know we're not going to lose 4 straight to this team. And they just went out there for an afternoon skate, and they got their teeth kicked in. And
so, okay, so hold on. Because you mentioned the Matias Yanmark goal, and I think it's really funny because Yanmark shot that wide. Like, yeah. Yanmark took the shot inside the blue paint, and if you follow the trajectory of the shot as it comes off of Yanmark's stick, it's going wide, but it hits Alexander Barkov and then goes into the net. Like, yeah. You want to talk about creating your own luck to a degree, right? Like, it's a great play by Connor Brown to kind of set it up, but Matias Yanmark shanked that shot. And it was almost a scenario where if Alexander Barkov isn't busting his butt to try to get to the front of the net to block the shot, that one goes wide and the Oilers are lamenting a great opportunity to kind of jump ahead in the game. And who knows what could have been different there. But it's a play that goes against Florida. And it felt like, at least to me, they were just swimming upstream all game long. They were behind the eight ball. They're not used to being behind in terms of this series. And it just felt like everything they did led to a breakdown or an opportunity for the Oilers.
Yeah, I mean, look, in earlier in that power play, I think Florida hit 2 posts on consecutive shots.
They did.
Yeah. I mean, the entire game could have taken on a completely different trajectory on that power play. Mm-hmm. Very early in the game. And look, you got to give credit to Edmonton because they could have laid down. They could have said, you know what, we're down 3-0. Woe is us. We're not going to come back. Their coach was talking about how they know how to win. And you know what? Credit to the Oilers. I ripped them on Friday as being arrogant and it being nonsensical, but they didn't lay down. The problem is you still got to find a way to win 3 more games, including 2 of them potentially in Florida. I don't think that's going to happen. I'm pretty confident the series ends tomorrow night. I don't think Florida is going to be as awful as they were on Saturday. But you got to give credit to the Oilers because they took advantage of their opportunities. They were buzzing all night. Dylan Holloway had a big game. Yanmark had an assist on that second goal. He had a goal and an assist on their first 2 goals. I think he had the game-winning assist on was it I'm trying to think who scored the second goal for Edmonton. But they were good. The Oilers played a really good game. They did what they needed to do. But you could tell once it got to like 3-1, and I think once McDavid scored that goal really early in the second period, you could tell Florida was just—they were just out there. They packed it in. They clearly were not interested in playing, and they got their ass kicked because of it. So, I'll say this: as good as Florida's been in this series, and as much as I like them, it's not a good look when you give up 9 goals in the Stanley Cup last year in the clinching game. And you go into a game with an opportunity to win the Stanley Cup, and you lay down and you give up 8 goals.
Let's stop there. It's not a good look. They are 1 win away from a Stanley Cup.
Oh, like, and they're going to win the Stanley
Cup.
They're going to win tomorrow.
If you're going to lose a game, like, I'd rather get pumped. Honest to God, like, I would rather it be 8-1. Than 3-2 in double overtime. Like, I'd rather be so far away and out of it that it really is inconsequential, the back half of the game, as opposed to being in it and thinking that your next shot could win you a Stanley Cup only to lose the game.
Like, I think that's fair.
It's a blowout. It is what it is. I think it's easier to move past that one because for the Florida Panthers, there's got to be pride, right? Like, you cannot get pumped like that in this series and not respond, not come back. Whereas if you lose 3-2 in double overtime and say it's two power play goals for the Edmonton Oilers and Connor McDavid has a three-point night, all of a sudden it starts to feel like you got robbed of something or you can't necessarily just get past it. I think in this situation, that loss is easier to move on from than one if it was a one-goal game in a double overtime.
Well, yeah,
that's just how I feel.
Because you know you didn't play. You didn't go out there and put the effort in. And I think that's why it's probably easier to digest. I heard Paul Maurice post-game making a comment about, well, you know, hopefully it's a little bit different on Monday, on Tuesday night, and I could come up with better answers to give you guys. I thought that was pretty funny. But, you know, it was just it was an ugly game, and you could tell it was going to be a blowout early on. I think, like I said, once McDavid scored that goal early in the second period, you knew Florida was not making a game of it. I mean, there was a moment there where, what was it, 2-1? You just scored the goal, and it could have gone a different way, you know. But I think
you're burying the lead on my great observations.
All right,
let's get into great observations.
Okay, well let's see what Leon has to say.
Great observation.
Okay, thanks, Leon. So before we get too far into this, I'm gonna be controversial here because I don't love the idea of the Conn Smythe going to a player on the opposition, on a team that loses a series. And listen, I get it. And I was quick to point this out on Friday when Chapman was essentially crowning the Florida Panthers as Stanley Cup champions, but they still have to win the fourth game. The hardest game to win is the fourth game. They have not done that yet. However, my first great observation is this. Connor McDavid has re-entered the Conn Smythe trophy conversation. Win or lose. And that might be the controversial part of the take, but I think it's one that's important and one that needs to be talked about because we might have that scenario play out tomorrow. It is very possible that Connor McDavid wins the Conn Smythe even if the Oilers lose tomorrow in Sunrise to the Florida Panthers. Because when you look at the totality of the playoffs that Connor McDavid has had, it's hard to argue that he hasn't been the most valuable and best player so far in these playoffs. He set the NHL record for assists in a playoff year with 32, besting Wayne Gretzky's 31. That was a record that many, myself included, never expected would fall, and yet Connor McDavid did it this year. And he still has potentially three more games to add to that total. When you look at his Stanley Cup final performance, picks up his first goal. He's only got one goal, but he does have 7 points in four games. For as much as we kind of talk about, you know, the Florida Panthers smothering the game's best stars, Connor McDavid's come through with some points and certainly came through with a big moment when his team needed him the most. And then you start to look at the totals for McDavid so far in these playoffs. He's got 38 points. The record for points in a postseason is 47. So he's 9 back of Wayne Gretzky. You mean to tell me that if the Oilers really make a push of this, if the Oilers really find a way to extend this out to 7 games, that Connor McDavid can't set the all-time points record in a playoff year? He absolutely can. He might do that tomorrow. That's how good he's been. So in terms of the point production, in terms of what McDavid's been able to do so far in this postseason, and then putting it into another lens, Connor McDavid has more assists than the leading point getter, Sasha Barkov, for the Florida Panthers. So if you're not going to give it to Bob, if you are going to give it to Barkov, it becomes a little bit muddier of a track to justify Barkov over McDavid, who's doing generational things in terms of point production. So great observation coming out of game 4 is that Connor McDavid, win or lose, is not out of the Conn Smythe race.
Great observation.
I don't think they will give it to a guy who loses, assuming they lose tomorrow night. I don't think you could lose the Stanley Cup in 5 games and win the Conn Smythe. But you never know. I mean, strange things will happen or have happened. Stranger things have happened. In the history of sports, but I just don't see it. I think if they can push it to 7, I think you've got a real argument there because it would have meant that Connor McDavid would have had a phenomenal final three games of this series or four games of the series to get to that point. But my observation is that the Edmonton Oilers have a lot more heart than I thought they did. Like, we heard the talk on Friday. We saw the push in game three in the third period, and I kind of thought, you know what, that's the best they've got. But they have a lot more heart than I thought. And I think it would have been very easy to come out and maybe not play a great game on Saturday, knowing that your backs are up against the wall and that the situation is dire. But they found their game. And if you look back to game three, that third period, they were the better team in the third period. And they were the better team on Saturday. So they've put together four really good periods in a row. Is it enough to allow them to make a comeback and do something historical in the series? I don't think so. But my observation is Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl and Zach Hyman and Darnell Nurse and Dylan Holloway and Adam Henrique, they've got a lot of heart. And Stuart Skinner, he hadn't been good in the series. He was good on Saturday, especially when he needed to come up with a big, big save. He found a way to get the job done. So my observation is that the Edmonton Oilers have a lot more heart than I thought they did.
Great observation.
All right, so I'm going to jump around here on my bingo card, and I'm going to piggyback off of Stuart Skinner. My great observation is that Stuart Skinner's save on Carter Verhaeghe in the first period was the biggest save of the series. It's unreal, because when you set the stage, when you think about it, right? Like, we talked about the Florida Panthers' early power play. They hit two pucks. Then the Oilers score a shorthanded goal. Then the Oilers score again. Then Vladimir Tarasenko gets you to within one. It's 2-1 midway through that first period, and it's a 2-on-1. It's Sam Bennett and Carter Verhaeghe. A perfect pass from Bennett, a perfect shot from Verhaeghe, and Stuart Skinner comes up with a brilliant save. A brilliant save. One I didn't expect he was going to make. One that I absolutely expected to go into the back of the net. And I thought we were tied midway through the first period. I thought it was everything the Oilers could throw at Florida. And, oh man, I can't believe this team just will not die. And yet, it changed the entire course of the game. Changed the entire course of that game. And potentially, if the Oilers can make a run here, it changed the course of the series. Because I firmly believe if Verhaeghe scores that goal, the Florida Panthers win the Stanley Cup. Because he didn't score that goal, the Edmonton Oilers live to fight another day, and they give themselves a little bit of hope. And that hope was administered by Stuart Skinner. And when he gives this team hope, they respond and they answer well in the playoffs. So that save from Stuart Skinner, the biggest save of this series.
Great observation.
So I think there's been some back and forth with me in this series in regards to the special teams. But Edmonton has a couple of big goals on the kill. Obviously, the one they scored Saturday night, and then they have a 4-on-4 goal, so that's not really the kill, but they had a 4-on-4 goal, I think, in game two. Their special teams has risen to the occasion in these playoffs. Like, I think we kind of slept a little bit on their power or on their kill. Like, I don't think anybody thought it was this good. Like, I think we knew they had the most elite power play unit in the league, right? Like, you look at
hold on. Are you seriously saying right now that we've slept on the Oilers penalty kill?
No, not in the playoffs. Going into the playoffs, I don't think anyone really thought it would be the key component that kind of led them. Like, it's been surprisingly really good to the point where it's probably one of the best penalty kills that we've seen in the playoffs in a long, long time. And that's not to say that Florida's isn't really, really good either. But the special teams in this series, the line between what's helping you win and helping you lose is so thin that every time there's a power play, you know that the team that scores the goal, if a team scores a goal in the power play, has busted their butt to get that goal. Like, there are no easy special teams goals in this series. And Edmonton special teams, they were really good on Saturday night. And it started with the shorthanded goal. And I think it's been fun to watch. Like, normally, I like watching teams score power play goals. But in this series, it's been reversed. I like watching these two teams on the kill, and it's not something that I would have thought going into a cup final that I would enjoy. I want goals. I want to see goals. I don't want to see penalties killed. But these two teams have been so good at killing penalties, not just in this series, but throughout the playoffs. It's been a fun journey. Like, it's been almost a revelation where you can really respect and appreciate how hard these teams are working to keep the puck out of the net on the penalty kill. I'm just saying, it's not really like a praise to either team, but it's a praise to both teams. And it's just been a lot of fun to watch. And I never thought that I would be like, oh, yay, penalty kill. All right, fantastic. No, I like it. I like watching it. I want to see more of it because – it's just these two teams are so good at doing it that I think as a fan of the game, you have to just enjoy it every time you watch one of these teams kill a penalty, because they're just going out there and guys are blocking shots, they're clogging lanes, they're aggressive. It's just been a lot of fun.
Great observation.
I will point out that the Florida Panthers hit two posts on consecutive shots on one of their power plays yesterday.
They certainly...
They were unlucky. I mean, they created two grade A looks and hit two posts. So I get your point, though. It makes a lot of sense. Now, for me, great observation. The Oilers' depth has arrived in these playoffs. And I think through the first four games of the Cup Final, they've been the best story for Edmonton. When you factor in the Stanley Cup Finals so far, you've got Dylan Holloway with a couple of goals. Matias Janmark had a goal and an assist in game number four. Connor Brown's on the score sheet with an assist. Warren Fogle had a big goal. Philip Broberg has found the back of the net in the series. Like, Matias Ekholm scored for you as well. You're getting contributions from Adam Henrique. Like, you are getting the type of scoring you need to win in the playoffs, in the Stanley Cup Final, absent your superstars taking over. And in game four, Connor McDavid took over. Leon Draisaitl had his best game so far at the Stanley Cup Final. You had a couple of points from Zach Hyman. Like, everything clicked for the Oilers, and depth scoring is only going to take you so far if you the top of the lineup, if the superstars are doing their job. And so when all of that clicks for the Oilers, they become a really scary team capable of putting eight on the board any night of the week, especially here in the Stanley Cup Finals. So their depth has been beyond compare in terms of past Oiler seasons. Where they've faltered in the playoffs has been when Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl get shut down and there's nothing to backfill behind them. That's not the case with these Oilers, and that's the biggest reason why they should have hope moving forward.
Great observation.
All right. Final one for me. And it's about Chris Knobloch. Chris Knobloch knows what he's doing. Like, I ripped him to shreds on Friday with his comments about we know how to beat these guys and we figured it out. And I was like, stop. You're down 3-0 in the series. You lost two games in the regular season. No. Chris Knobloch knew exactly what he was doing when he went out there after game three and made those comments. He pushed the right buttons in that locker room. He got his players to play. He took all the pressure off of his guys and put it on him. He became the focal point, not the guys in the locker room. And it worked. at least for one game. The question is, can you make it work for three more? I don't know. We'll have to see. But for a coach to go out there, a rookie coach who had not yet beaten the Florida Panthers, to go out there and basically make comments like you were the team that was up in the series, I thought, looking back, it was a good move. Because he took all the pressure off of the Edmonton Oilers. He let them go out and just play hockey. And that's what they did on Saturday night. They just went out and they played their game. They played a good game. They played the best game that they've played in probably two series. So for that, I think Chris Knobloch taking the pressure off his team, putting it all on his shoulders, I think it was a good move. And it worked.
Great observation.
Well, maybe we shouldn't have ripped him, but at least now he can say that they've shown they can beat the Florida Panthers. So well done, Chris Knobloch. You were just a couple of days ahead of your time. Final great observation for me is very simply that it is difficult to close out for a Stanley Cup final or for a Stanley Cup in the Stanley Cup final. It's not easy. Simply put, it's not easy. This is the first time Saturday, Game 4, was the first time the Florida Panthers organization had an opportunity to win a Stanley Cup. I know they've been in Stanley Cup finals before, but it was their first opportunity to play to eliminate their opposition and win a Stanley Cup. That's a lot of pressure. It changes your approach to the game. It changes your mindset. And until you've been through it, you don't know what it's like. And to a degree, I think that we have kind of lost sight of how difficult it is because the Golden Knights made it look really easy. You alluded to it, Chapman. The Golden Knights hung 9 on the board in their first opportunity to eliminate a team in the Stanley Cup final. And it just so happened that it was the Florida Panthers, and it was last year, and the Golden Knights would not be denied, and their laser focus was there. Now, I checked in on the text line, and Wes asked a really good question. Do you believe the Florida Panthers would have come out flat if Game 4 was on home ice in Florida as opposed to in Edmonton? That's a really good question that I don't know the answer to. Because regardless of where you're playing, whether it is, you know, whether it's on the road or at home, I feel like the pressure mounts and it's hard to do. It just is. You've got friends and family. You're trying to make sure everybody could get there in the event that you win. Like, there are other things swirling around your head beyond just the dream that you've dreamt since you were a 2 or 3 year old kid learning to skate wherever you learned how to skate. And so I think that moment became big. I think that moment started to really creep into the mindset of the Florida Panthers. And I think having gone through it now, one of Chris Knobloch's other media things is that experience doesn't matter. I think the Panthers will be better for it now. They've been through it. They've understood that process of going through a couple of days, thinking about winning the Stanley Cup, thinking about how close you are, thinking about how you only need one more game, one more win, one more save, one more goal. I think now you've experienced it, and the Florida Panthers will be better for it going into game number 5 in front of their home crowd. That will be a factor in this as well. But bottom line, closing out's hard. It's hard in any series. In the first round, second round, conference final, it doesn't matter, but it is especially difficult when you can reach out and you can feel like you can taste and grasp the Stanley Cup. It's within your reach, but you need one more win. It is hard to maintain that level of focus and intensity through the grueling schedule that is the Stanley Cup playoffs, and to be so close to the end that you can taste it, but not yet there. It can play with your mind, especially when you're the team that has a chance to close it out. For the Edmonton Oilers, there's no pressure here. I mean, there's pressure to win, sure. There's pressure to want to extend your season, but no one's expecting that from you. That expectation is gone. No one thinks the Oilers are truly going to force a 7-game, let alone win the Stanley Cup. All the pressure right now is on the Florida Panthers. And now that they've been through it, I expect them to be a better team come tomorrow night.
Great observation.
All right, thanks, Leon. I appreciate you and your involvement in this segment. It has truly been one of my favorites to do. We're going to take a break and come back with more next on the VGK Insider Show. Limp Bizkit, huh?
Yeah, you know what? There's a reason behind that, actually. Because I feel like
I
feel like that song was popular and was a big radio hit the last time Adam Henrique scored a goal in the Stanley Cup final. So I felt it was fitting to play some Limp Bizkit, because I think that's the last time we talked about Limp Bizkit when Adam Henrique was playing for the Devils like 75 years ago.
Wasn't that in 2012?
That was a long time ago. It was over a decade ago.
I think it was like Limp Bizkit's heyday.
Well, it's close enough.
I don't know that 2012 was like the high water mark of Limp Bizkit's career.
No, it was.
I could be wrong.
No, it was probably a little bit further back, but it was just kind of a joke. You know, like, oh, these guys, the last time Adam Henrique scored a goal in the Stanley Cup final, these guys were popular.
You know, you could have gone to like the charts of June 2012 and picked the number one song at that time, and I think the joke would have landed a little bit better than going a decade beyond Adam Henrique.
Let's see.
Scoring a goal in the Stanley Cup final.
What was the number one song in June according to Billboard? Call Me Maybe by Carly Rae Jepsen. Yeah. Somebody
that would have been better. That would have made more sense.
How about Somebody That I Used to Know? Remember that song?
Yeah, it's, what is that?
I don't know how you say Godier? The guy's name. Godier, featuring Kimbra.
Yeah, there it is.
Payphone by Maroon 5 with Wiz Khalifa.
See, there you go. That would have been a banger.
You know what?
Literally anything would have been better than Limp Bizkit.
Here's the problem, Ryan. I don't feel like these songs were that long ago. Like, it feels like the Devils playing in the Stanley Cup final was a long time ago.
It was a long time ago, and those songs are from a long time ago.
No, they don't seem like
but
I don't,
like
I don't
Limp
feel
Bizkit's
like
from a long, long time ago.
Yeah, probably the last time the Devils won the Cup.
That's probably more accurate.
Yeah, what was that, 2003? Actually, that Limp Bizkit may have already been in the dumpster by then.
They had their meteoric rise and their absolute crash back down to Earth.
Meteoric fall back to Earth too, yeah.
So you thought it was a good idea to go with a song that you thought was popular the last time Adam Henrique scored a goal in the Stanley Cup final, only to find out that you like overshot by a decade.
Yeah, well, I mean, they all kind of mesh together now for me. Like I'm
oh, you're that guy.
You know, no, so this is crazy. So I saw somebody, a kid that I graduated high school with. He's not even a kid. Listen to me. A guy I graduated high school with put something on his Facebook about how, you know, this date is closer to this date. And it dawned on me, it was on D-Day, and it was the 80th anniversary of D-Day. And it dawned on me that I was born closer to D-Day than it was from D-Day to the day that I – from the 80th anniversary of D-Day to the day that I was born by 10 years. By 10 years. I was born the 35th anniversary of D-Day. We just had the 80th anniversary of D-Day. So I'm like, wow, D-Day, not that long ago, at least when I was born. Now we're looking back 80 years ago, and I'm like, whew, it's a long time ago. Getting old sucks.
I think Joey Zamboni's going to fight me.
Why's that?
Well, because he's excited about the Limp Bizkit intro.
Why am I not surprised?
He hit us on the text
line. Joey Zamboni likes Limp Bizkit.
702-876-1340. It's a text line. You can always jump in with your thoughts and opinions. Joey Zamboni, a big fan of Limp Bizkit. Good on you. I don't mind it, but like you can't go to Limp Bizkit as a rejoin, like as music, generally speaking, without having a good reason. Like, they're not one of those bands that you just kind of slip in because you want to. You slip it in because you assume, or at least in my thought process here, is that I assumed there was a connection or a point you were trying to make. It's just, you have to be right about the point that you're making.
I overshot the mark.
You overshot the mark. Yeah. And all it would have taken, and this is one of the things that Darren gets on you all the time about. all it would have taken was a quick Google search, right? Like, best songs or most popular songs of 2012, right?
Yeah.
That's all it would have taken.
Yeah, but you know, when Carly Rae Jepsen doesn't hit,
you would have realized it wasn't Limp Bizkit.
It doesn't hit the same way that Fred Durst does.
No, it does. Literally anything can hit the same way that Fred Durst does.
I don't know, man.
Like you can tell I'm not a big Limp Bizkit fan. They were never my cup of tea.
No.
So
did you ever see them?
Did you?
Yeah, they put on a good show. I saw them twice.
Really?
Yeah. They put on the first.
Can you tell me about their good show? I'm curious now.
So the first.
Maybe I'm just being unfair.
The first time I saw them was on the '97 Warped Tour. And this was way before they ever got popular. Like, they were on the side stage.
Okay, hold on. You have direct experience of seeing this band in the late 90s.
Yes, yes.
And you thought that you were on the mark for 2012.
Yes.
God, I love you, Chapman.
Oh, man. Yeah, so they were on the side stage. Like, that's how low-key mm-hmm. they were. And my buddy... Yep. My buddy Jim, he knew who they were, so he was like, hey, I want to see this band. And I was like, okay. So we went over, and there were like 40 people there. By the end of their set, there were probably a few thousand because they put on such a good show. Like, everybody was making their way over to the side stage to see these guys play because it was such a good show. Now, the second time I saw them, not as good. They had become a little more popular, mm-hmm. so I feel like maybe they were mailing it in at that point. Whereas the first time I saw them, they were earning that paycheck.
Well, they were fighting and competing for people to like them.
Yeah,
makes sense.
I always
like the Florida Panthers.
Yes,
right.
Yes,
the Florida Panthers through the first three games of the Stanley Cup Final were early Limp Bizkit when nobody knew who they were, but they were earning that paycheck, as you said. And certainly the second time that you saw them, it was more. Game 4 Florida Panthers, and
they
it was games
it
1 through yeah. 3 Florida Panthers.
Yeah, huh. Mailed it in.
Okay.
Paul Maurice was not Fred Durst.
Stephanie says that the last time Limp Bizkit was really popular was when she was in middle school, which is the early 2000s. So, you overshot the mark, or undershot the mark. I'm not sure exactly how that works out.
Trying to land on the aircraft carrier
experience
I completely missed.
Yeah, so your experience with Limp Bizkit is one that I had with Avenged Sevenfold. And it's really funny because it was right around the time that Backcountry came out. And so people knew who Avenged Sevenfold were, but they were opening up for Coheed and Cambria, which is just the funniest thing in the world. Because you don't expect now. Like, if you were to tell somebody now that there was once upon a time where Avenged Sevenfold opened for Coheed, people would say that's ridiculous, right? Like, there's no way. But I can assure you it did happen. And it was right around the Backcountry album for Avenged, and they just started like playing those harmonized solos that they're now known for. So it wasn't particularly tight in terms of their execution on stage, and it was the only time that I've seen Avenged. I went into it kind of excited about it, and then that first solo hit, and I couldn't do it. I had to get up and walk away. Like, I literally had to leave and just save my energy for Coheed because it was that rough around the edges. And then like 3 years later, 4 years later, Avenged became the biggest band in the world for like a nanosecond. And they were playing here in Vegas. It was one of those festivals. I can't exactly remember the name of it because it was a long time ago and I'm older now. And I'll tell you, like, I was so stoked. I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna see Avenged. Like, I'm excited. I wonder how much better they've gotten between, you know, the first time I saw them where I literally had to leave the room to now. And then I realized that I worked on the wrong day. Like, it was a station run thing. And I did the day before. So the headliner was Godsmack. And I was like, oh, all right. That's cool, I guess. And then I was not working the night that Avenged Sevenfold played. So I was bummed. And I've never seen them since.
Wow. I've never seen them at all. My kid
bums
likes them. My kid likes them, but I haven't seen them. So, you know, weirdest concert I think I ever went to was Nine Inch Nails and David Bowie. Like, that was a strange one to me.
Yeah, I can imagine.
But it was great because I had never gotten to see Bowie before. So, and obviously I can't go see him now. But, like, I mean, he put on a good show. I didn't really know a lot of his music at the time, but like a couple songs he played, I knew. But yeah, it was strange. The mid '90s were a bit weird sometimes for music, because I saw Marilyn Manson open for Nine Inch Nails a couple years before, and now I would imagine if they played together, Nine Inch Nails would probably open for Marilyn Manson.
I don't know. I don't think he's that popular anymore.
No, you're probably right. Maybe like 10, 15 years ago, he would have. It would have been that way. I took my kid to go see what's the band from Armenia? I'm blanking on their name. They do like Sugar and Spider Web.
Oh.
System of a Down. System of a Down. What is it? Spiders, right?
Oh, okay.
Spiders. Yeah, I took them to go
see. Yeah,
you
said Spider Web, and I started thinking. No, you said Spider Web, and I'm thinking of No Doubt.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, for sure.
So I took him, because he likes them, so I took him to go see them at T-Mobile, and it was so weird because Korn opened up for System of a Down. And in my mind, I'm thinking Korn is a bigger band than System of a Down, but nope, apparently it was System of a Down's tour, and Korn opened up for them.
See, like, it's all about timing, but, like, System of a Down was pretty big for a while, for sure. Stephanie's also mad at me about my Godsmack take. You're right. Stephanie says Godsmack deserves better than my nonchalance. That's correct.
No, they kind of get that from me, too.
I'm not the biggest Godsmack fan. Like, it's nothing against them in particular. I'm not, like, a huge fan of their sound, and that's one of the issues that I have. But now we're starting to talk about concerts and entertainment and stuff like that. We have got Tyler Ferraro, the director of entertainment experience, coming up in hour number two to talk about an Emmy that the Golden Knights organization just won. But I want to hear from you in the text line, 702-876-1340, your most interesting, unique concert experience. I just throw it out there. I think I've had some really good ones when I was younger. It was probably a perfect, like, I saw a Perfect Circle, and it's one of those shows that stands out in my mind for a number of reasons, not the least of which is that I didn't see Maynard at all. Like, he was in darkness the entire show. And, like, I know that that's pretty normal for Maynard when it comes to his performances, but it's like, I paid money to see you, buddy. I don't want to see a shadow. That sucks. That's annoying.
I feel you.
Not a fan of that.
Yeah, I haven't seen Perfect Circle.
All right, we'll take a break. Oh, yeah. Well, I'll tell you, it was good. It was a great show. But again, I wanted to see Maynard. Like, I've seen Tool, and that was cool. But, like, I wanted to see Maynard on stage play with a Perfect Circle. And it was just like, I got, you know, 3/4 of the band, and then a shadow singing to me. Not a fan of that.
Totally understandable.
All right, let's take a break. Set up hour number two of the VGK Insider Show next. VGK Insider Show is rolling along in hour number two with Tyler Ferraro, the director of entertainment experience. The Golden Knights have won an Emmy, and we are going to talk to Tyler about that. It's not often you get to have an Emmy winner on your program. We're going to get to do that with Tyler in just a couple of minutes. We're also going to dig into one-timers, news and notes from around the National Hockey League. The Columbus Blue Jackets have made a change at head coach, and it's wild to consider the fact that when the Blue Jackets hit the ice this coming season, they will have their fourth coach in three seasons. Let that sink in. We'll dig into that in one-timers as well. That's all coming up next on the VGK Insider Show.